Time to take a look at your personal computer. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Always great to have him along. And certainly if you're having some problem with your PC, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number, if you're in the Madison area, is 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, toll free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
You've had some experiences with bundling, and I think it'd probably be worth sharing some of what you've learned.
Well, it goes back to the mid-90s when they were redoing Madison for cable access. And Charter obviously has that contract or, you know, franchise for Madison. So on the west side where I live, I remember them putting it in, and they had to resod my lawn because they decided to access an area where they didn't ask for permission and dug up the lawn and said, this is the way we're leaving it. And I said, you never asked for permission. So we're going back to the mid-90s when they were rewiring Madison. So, I'd been with Charter for a really long time. And, you know, I get a mailing for a bundle and promises, you know, to lock in pricing for a couple of years. And I'm like, maybe now's the time to make a switch. Maybe try something a little different. Well, I didn't ask for references. I didn't ask for, you know, can you do this or can you not do this? Mm-hmm. I proceeded to go ahead. Well, to me, the equivalent is sort of like, you know, a huge aircraft carrier when you launch it from a port and then you say, well, I got to go to the right or I got to go to the left. You know, you got to plan miles ahead. And I guess my poor planning led me down the path of where I ended up, you know, what the end result was. And when they promise things, there's really fine print, and then there's not the printed fine print that should be there, which is, you know, check references and you ask for references in your area.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them that you want to know who has the service at the speed that they're promising, because they put out these flyers or postcards or letters that say we can do 10 meg, we can do 5 meg, we can do 4.5, and so forth, is ask for references in the area, talk to some of your neighbors, even ask for a technician to pre-qualify your location, your house, even your business, because I'm going through this with a business as well. So ask to get pre-qualified, get it tested, because there's a thing called being a distance from a switch and being too far, which means that they can't guarantee the signal. So what happens is you may have high speed, but then it drops off, so it's not reliable.
Yeah.
But when they slow it down, then it becomes reliable. So instead of getting, you know, what they may have offered to be 4.5 or 5 meg, actually becomes a third of that at 1.5, because that's where it's reliable. So, you know, ask for references, get a technician to pre-qualify. And if you've already had this done and you've already been frustrated, you know, don't accept no. Mm-hmm. Don't accept what is the end result. You should elevate your situation to a supervisor within the company, and you should be able to break your contract at any time. You should ask for this because you shouldn't be able to be, you shouldn't have to be locked in to what really should be, the end result is unacceptable. So you should ask to be able to be released from your agreement if you decide you want to change, and negotiate. You know, if you are willing to accept that lower rate, then you should be able to get, you know, pay less money, not like a $5 discount, because it's not apples to apples.
Yeah.
So, you know, you should go back and revisit with them, because, you know, people say in this whole process, I've had friends and colleagues say to me, you know, how do normal people deal with this? And I'm telling you, You shouldn't accept no, and you shouldn't accept, you know, what it is. You should go back and you should, you know, talk to a supervisor, and you should negotiate and move forward with that.
Well, speaking of speed, I think Lori in Verona may have a speed issue, so let's turn to Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just online with a technician last night because my computer has been, it's about 5 years old. It's been running increasingly slowly. Email, internet seems to be running slowly. It starts up very slowly. So he did remote control of my computer and optimized it, and also suggested that I increase my RAM. I have 256, and he was recommending 512 or 1 gig. The thing is, after he did the optimization, it didn't seem a whole lot better, and I'm wondering if it's worth investing in the RAM or if there's likely to be something else going on.
Which operating system are you using? Do you know? Is it Windows Home or?
Well, it's. Let me see.
It's probably, you know, Windows XP Home is what I'm
yeah,
going to guess.
Yeah, Windows XP.
I will tell you that Windows XP likes 1 gig of RAM. 2 gigs is better, and depending upon, so you know, all the optimization and so forth, that's a good thing, but it's really the memory that really makes a huge difference. And depending upon, I'm not going to go through all the different things that you're probably doing, but let's say you're browsing, you're using email, and maybe one or two other applications. And, you know, if you optimize what programs start, which I'm going to assume that he did, but you can tell by the lower right-hand corner of your desktop, you might have fewer little pictures or icons that
that's
are launched.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, that's a good thing. You don't want a lot of those. In most cases, they're unnecessary. But the extra memory, Windows, if you look in the flyer for, you know, the Sunday newspaper, and you look at some of the major retailers and business places, Office Depot, Office Max, Circuit City, Best Buy, and you look at the configuration of the computers being sold today, almost all of them, except for the very low, you know, like entry-level systems, are starting with 2, even 3 gigs of RAM. And that's because Windows Vista is even more hungry for memory.
So get with all the, some more memory.
With all the improvements and service packs that they've done with Windows XP, it requires more and more RAM.
Okay.
So
right.
What you may have to do, a good thing to do with your system is if you go to do a Google search on Belarc Advisor, B-E-L-A-R-C, space Advisor, and download that application. That'll tell you all about what's in your computer and how much memory. It may tell you the number of slots that you have occupied and open. It's not an absolute. I've seen it make mistakes, but it's probably 9 out of 10 times it's probably accurate. But to add memory to your system, you might have to take out one of those memory strips. So in other words, you might have one 256K memory strip in your system, and you might have to take that out and replace it with two 1-gig strips to bring it up to 2 gigs.
Wow. Okay. So, now, the other thing that the tech I spoke to last night suggested was that I call Dell, that mm-hmm. not every RAM board that I could get at Best Buy would necessarily go in the back.
Right. There are, I'm trying to remember, there's memory places, Kingston.com for Kingston Memory, Crucial, C-R-U-C-I-A-L, .com, Crucial Memory. Those are memory manufacturers. Pony, PNY.com might be one, or I know PNY is their initial. You can, they have memory configure, you know, they configure the memory for your system online. So in other words, if you plug in the Dell model, mm-hmm. it'll tell you which memory they have available that's compatible.
Oh, great.
And you may be able to then go to some of the websites for the retail suppliers, Staples, Office Depot, Office Max, Best Buy, Circuit City. You could go to all their .coms and then plug in the memory that would be compatible and see what comes up as a result.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I shop for things.
Okay. Good luck, Lori. Thank you for calling. Jeff in Eau Claire is up next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yep.
I just wanted to say thanks for taking my call and for the service that you provide. I'm having a problem with my my CD-ROM drive, the secondary one, the one that burns CDs.
Okay.
With my computer that is not attached to the Internet. Sometimes... when my computer does recognize the drive, I click on the, what the CD is, and then everything just freezes up. And sometimes the drive isn't even recognized in the control panel.
Okay.
Okay. One thing I would do is probably try and update the device driver for the CD drive that you're having a problem with. I've also have seen problems where fixed where the video driver also needs to be updated. Is it an intermittent problem, or is it something that you know is pretty constant where you're not having access to it?
Well, it has worked in the past. Mm-hmm. Since I've had this computer, it hasn't been hooked up to the Internet, and it's worked. I did install Easy Media Creator 8, mm-hmm. and I thought that might be the problem, so I uninstalled that.
Okay.
And then I was looking at message boards on the Internet when I got home, and mm-hmm. It mentioned that the device driver is included on the CD-ROM for the program.
Yeah, that. See, that sometimes when they include the device driver, and you do the uninstall is not clean, and it actually, you know, it leaves that behind, and that could be the problem.
Oh.
So I'll just give you an example of where I've had a problem with a computer that was actually, you know, brand new, out of the box, and I tried to hook it up to the Internet. And I've told this story before, but I'll be quick about it. Where I tried to actually hook it up to a wireless Internet connection, and the system kept rebooting. And the system was actually shipped with a bad device driver for the wireless network card.
I heard this one before.
Yeah, yeah. So don't accept that, you know, just because it was shipped with it, that, you know, it's absolutely perfect. So if you know it was working before, I was going to ask you if you installed anything different, and you answered that question, simply doing the uninstall is not going to fix the problem. You might have been better off going to system, you know, restore prior to the install than the uninstall, because some of the uninstalls are actually not clean enough to, you know, prove that that was the culprit.
Well, I tell you, it seems that I've tried everything. I have tried that.
Okay.
And I have tried using my Windows XP manufacturer's disk and doing a repair. That hasn't worked. When the program was uninstalled, I tried using Real Player, the onboard application inside there to use to burn the CD, and everything just freezes up.
Yeah, the only other things I can think of to go down other paths, one would be whether or not you change the media, and the media seems to be causing the problem. And the other thing is, actually just physically changing the CD drive to a different drive, mm-hmm. you know, and ruling it out that way.
Right. Yeah, so. It could be the drive itself being defective.
Right.
Right.
And in that case, you know, you probably would want to look at, you know, a DVD burner, because it would include a CD, you know, burner as well.
All right.
So hopefully those things lead you to a good result.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. And Diane in Madison is up next with a question. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to assist my 81-year-old mother in getting a new laptop. She uses it. She wants to use it primarily for email and some word processing. And I'm feeling a bit confused about how to compare across brands for the best configuration of offerings. So some have more memory, some have faster processors, et cetera. She doesn't have, you know, a wide variety of needs or activities that she's going to be using the computer for,
right.
But she really needs to upgrade because her current computer is about 5 or 6 years old, and it gets incredibly slow.
And does she have an idea of how much she wants to spend?
She's not looking, you know, she's an old lady. She doesn't think that it would be worth putting in $2,000 or $3,000 to get a laptop. But you want something that's reliable.
Right. A number of options. One is, I think, you said for email and word processing, virtually any entry-level laptop, you know, is going to be capable of handling that.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of options in terms of, you know, between, for Windows systems, $500 to $1,000 with plenty of memory. Is she a Windows user?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
And she's had a Gateway laptop, you know, for about 6 years.
Yeah. There, you know, Gateway is still out there, still a manufacturer. So, you know, if she feels comfortable with the brand, that's fine. I'm not sure if you can still get Windows XP. But
no. The models that I've looked at, both Dell and Gateway, they all come with Vista.
Right. Which to me is unfortunate because they're not, you know, they put it off, but they didn't put it off long enough. you know, and going back without the manufacturer's stamp, you know, help makes it more difficult for, you know, someone like you or your mother to do that. Another option, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're looking at $1,000, $2,000, is possibly looking at either an Apple portable. And someone brought to my attention that they actually have some pretty good deals on recertified refurb Apple notebook computers. So, you know, checking with the Apple store, I believe you could probably buy them online.
Uh-huh.
But that's an option, too.
Be simpler to use.
Yeah.
Then.
I can tell you, you know, I use both an Apple and a PC, you know, Windows system. And the Windows system takes second fiddle to Apple in terms of booting up and, you know, being ready to use. And, you know, for the just a couple of things that she wants to do and, you know, that might be an option, too. So, you know, I'm just putting it out there.
Okay. Thanks
right.
so much.
Yep,
you
thanks
know,
a lot.
As far as brand differences,
not
you know,
a lot of difference.
You know, HP, Gateway, Dell. It's more fun to window shop locally, but you can buy them online. You know, Dell sometimes has specials where they throw in extras. Locally, when you look at the stores, they all have their different sales and rebates and instant money back. And so it's kind of a one week it's this way and next week it's the other way. So you just have to look for the best deal if you're going that way.
Thanks a lot for calling today. I appreciate it. Just mention I got an email from, let's see, who is it from? Peter. But we don't have all of the information. So if he wants to send that one again, I notice that it cuts off here toward the end of the...
So resubmit.
You need to resubmit that one. Ron in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thank you. Peter, I have a problem similar to your first caller, Lori's. I have an older Mac iBook, extremely slow. I did reinstall the operating system, and that didn't help, and I lost my Safari browser when I did it. Do you have any suggestions?
When you said it's slow, how old is the system?
Oh, it's 4 or 5 years old.
So you went through and reinstalled the operating system. And then when you said you lost your Safari, was it not part of the reinstall? Or?
Correct. After I reinstalled, it wasn't there. I had Internet Explorer, but no Safari.
Okay. All right. Well, I believe you could probably download that application because it's include. You know, Apple includes that. So what you may want to do is use, you know, Internet Explorer to nav. Can you get online still with it?
Yes.
Is to go to apple.com and go to their support area. And I'm sure if you did a search for, you just have to make sure that you specify which version of the OS that you're using so that you can download, you know, Safari for that so it'll work.
Yep.
How about increasing the speed of the machine?
How much memory do you have in your system?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you.
Okay. Usually in the, you know, in the system info, it'll
tell you that.
Yes, it does, but I just can't tell you. I don't remember.
Apple systems are not as memory intensive as Windows systems. But if you're able to bump up the memory from your existing, you know, was it slow before you had the problem?
No.
It wasn't. It might be because your system is looking for, you know, things that that it thinks should be installed. So it's spending time, you know, trying to, you know,
to find those
to
things.
Find them. Is there anything else that was not installed? Other than Safari?
No.
Okay. Oh,
I'm sorry, Firefox was in.
Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. It sounds to me like, you know, if it's if it wasn't slow before and you did a system reinstall, and I haven't had too much experience with Apple's with doing something like that, Larry, but I know in a Windows environment, the system will almost like be doing a juggling act because mm-hmm. it's looking for things that should be there. And in some cases, it tells you, and in other cases, it doesn't. So
it may be that it's looking for something and it's not there and it's trying to find it, and that's taking up the making it slow.
Right. And it's constantly doing that. The other thing is, I know, you know, when you do a Windows install, the default is to accept Windows in terms of for performance to let it have control. And I'm sure Apple's probably the same way, but there may have there may have been settings that you had in your system that for your preferences were changed one way versus the default. So unless you know how to, you know, check for that, you may want to take it in and have someone look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, yep. Thanks
Good
a
luck.
Lot for calling. John in Germantown, your turn now. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Three things, two answers. Crucial.com actually has a program you can download, and it works just like Velarc Advisor. You get a little icon on your desktop, and you just double-click on it. It'll actually go out as long as you're on the Internet. It will tell you exactly what type of memory you need and how much you have. And then, obviously, it tells you if they have it in stock or not and what it would cost, and you can click on that. But it'll actually give you the style, the type, and the whole nine yards, what you can do.
Good.
And how
yep.
much you can enter into it. As far as XP systems, I mentioned this once before. Former IBM, they sold to a company called Lenovo, L-E-N-O-V-O. Up to a few months ago, I know they were still offering, you could buy a system online and customize it with XP as the operating system. So that was the other thing I wanted to mention.
What is that called?
Lenovo, L-E-N-O-V-O. It's the old IBM ThinkPad. They sold out their PC.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Lenovo. So I actually ordered one through my company online, and I got XP. That's why I got it.
Yep. That's a really good suggestion. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. The third thing is regarding the Radio Waves newsletter, Larry.
Yeah.
And I was mentioning this to your producer, and I just want to congratulate him on the air. He's actually one of the featured articles, his Life and Times with Wisconsin Public Radio, and I just want to congratulate him because, you know, when you make a good plywood, you have to have the right glue between the layers, and he's that kind of a guy. He's in the background doing all those things, and I was just amazed at how much he does and how involved he is. You hardly ever hear about him.
Yeah, I would recommend everybody take a look at that article.
Yes.
Jim does a lot.
We all lean on Jim.
Congratulations.
Thanks, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I hope Jim was paying attention there and not talking to somebody else on the phone. Oh, man. Karen in Third Lake, Illinois, I think, is our next caller. Karen, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have this email that is so intriguing, and I just wondered if he knew anything about it. So anyway, it says, download and start watching live television. No subscriptions, no monthly fees, no contracts. And, of course, I don't recognize the sender. So I'm just wondering, should I go ahead and open it up? I'm just scared.
Go ahead and ignore it.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I've
explored the online world of access to TV. I'm trying to remember what event I wanted to watch. Oh, it was the Packer football game.
Because
I was a Charter subscriber, so I didn't have access to the NFL network. So I'm like, you know what? Let's see what's out there. So I went and was downloading all these different things. And I didn't want to spend any money. So I was trying all these different ways to try and access TV over the internet, and found that the free ones and the ones that really gave you TV access were, some of them were like recorded programs that were, you're just, you didn't really have, you just watch them over and over again. And the channels were from overseas.
Oh.
And you could watch soccer games and rugby games from overseas. But, you know, I was trying to find a solution for something for here. And I can wholeheartedly say, you know, absolutely that, you know, $30 is going to get you free TV access, you know, over your PC. I didn't go that far, but I would probably do the research via hardware or software forums on the internet, and see which ones may work or what restrictions apply. But you know, in terms of getting an email sent to you that promises that, I'd be real leery of trying it that way.
Oh, great. I'm glad I didn't open it then. Yeah. Okay, and I'll go see what I can find online.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot.
And if you find something and you decide to make the investment, I think they're like $30, and you find something that works, call us back and,
let us know.
A piece of junk, or, yeah, it was great, and, I can do this and I can do that. But I will tell you, you need high-speed internet because moving video files and streaming them is memory intensive on the computer, both for RAM, and occupies some space on the hard drive. And the bandwidth speed, you're going to probably want to go at least, I'm guessing, 2, maybe 4, meg internet speed. So it's not something for dial-up.
No, that's for sure. Thanks, Karen. Myrna in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Myrna.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about my Dell Image Expert program that appears to be corrupt because I cannot open photos that are from downloads, from email attachments and so forth using that. And I don't seem to be able to bypass that either. I'm trying to open with Paint or open with Windows Fax Viewer or something like that. But I do have the original application disk for reinstalling Dell tools, and it has support software, multimedia software, internet software on it. I haven't opened that yet, but my question is, if I uninstall and reinstall Dell Image Expert, will that in any way affect those images that are already saved on the computer, or will those get covered up by the uninstall and reinstall?
Okay, that's a good question. It sounds to me like you haven't backed your system up. Am I correct?
I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Well, you should probably, now is probably a good time to do that. All programs uninstall and reinstall differently.
Okay.
When you've already had a prior install, sometimes removing them may remove the file locations of where your data files are. In other words, it may attempt to delete them where it thinks it's doing a cleanup, or it may leave them there, and then doing a reinstall will work. But it may change some references in where it's pointing on your hard drive and may give you some difficulty finding those old files.
Mm-hmm.
So a simple way to – how old's your computer?
It's 5 years.
Okay.
SP. It's in pretty good shape.
Okay. But you probably – you know, an easy thing to do – do you have a CD burner?
Yes.
Okay. You could go out and get, you know, some CDs, and what you do is find the folder on your hard drive that has those pictures.
Okay.
And you could drop that folder to copy it to a CD.
Okay.
Okay, that's one thing. Another option is to go out and buy what they call a thumb drive or a USB drive. And I remember seeing in the paper this weekend, I think, a 4 gigabyte drive. So that's, let's say, a CD stores, let's just round it off, 400 megabytes.
Okay.
And a thumb drive you can buy for under $30 that stores 4 gigabytes. That's equivalent to 10 CDs, okay? So we're doing the math here.
Mm-hmm.
So you could buy one for $30, and you can copy the equivalent to 10 CDs onto a USB drive, and it would be the same thing. So when you plug in that USB little device,
mm-hmm.
And it's usually no bigger than your thumb, that's why they call them thumb drives,
mm-hmm.
You can copy it to that letter drive, because your computer calls it a certain letter once you plug it in. So that's one thing you can do. The other is off of my Virus Info Center page, I've got a number of websites that offer free backup space, the same thing equivalent to 5 gigabytes of space, and sometimes even more, and also ways of sharing your photos with family members if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to infostar.com and on the left-hand side, click on the Virus Info Center page. And then you'll see in the top third, you'll look for the links where it says backups.
Okay.
And you'll find a whole bunch of linked resources that have, the ability for you to do online backups. And you can even schedule and time them so on a regular basis it's backed up.
Okay.
So I would focus on the backups first.
Now, is the backup done internally on the existing hard drive, or I always figured I needed a separate attachment or something for a backup?
Well, that's what that thumb drive is.
Oh, okay.
Plugging it into a USB port.
Yeah.
Sometimes you might see them on the front of your computer, and sometimes they may be in the back.
Okay.
So the CD is attached to your computer, but it's not part of your hard drive. So
exactly.
The files would be copied off of the hard drive to the CD, or off of the hard drive to the thumb drive, or off of the hard drive via your internet connection to one of those backup sites, which of course you would have a username and a password, so only you have access to that.
Okay.
So, but you know, having a broadband or a fast connection for doing the online backups helps. It will do it if you have dial-in, but it's going to take quite a while because picture files are usually pretty big.
Yeah.
So now, in terms of fixing the problem with your pictures, once you've backed them up, doing the uninstall and the reinstall is a good thing to do. The other option is to you know, look at maybe finding another viewer that might, you know, work if that continues to be a problem. Mm-hmm. You could go to a site called cnet.com, cnet.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do a search for picture viewer, you'll probably find a lot of free programs out there and ones that people have rated, you know, to tell you how good they are.
Okay. Well, that's a good start.
Yep.
All right, good luck.
But focus on the backups first.
Okay, do the backup before trying to uninstall.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Adam in Rockford, your turn. Hi, Adam.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple questions. One question is I've got a Sony Vaio laptop that's three and a half years old, something like that. And I've done the system restore a couple different times. And this last time that I did it, I used the recovery disks that you create, you know, when you get the computer or when you're ready to back it up or whatever.
Right.
And it was about maybe a month and a half ago, and I restored it again. I'm having a problem with my, when I go to the Microsoft update or Windows update, either one, I can't use their update service. It worked for the first handful of updates, but then I had to find, it would download it, and it would say the installation itself had failed. And so I had gone and found the latest Internet Explorer and the Media Player and all that stuff separately and was able to download and update those. But as far as the Windows components or the Windows update, it won't allow me to install any of that. And I was wondering if, short of spending an hour and a half in live chat with the people on Windows, if there's anything I could do to get these, to get those updates.
Yeah, what I would do, you have Windows XP?
Correct.
Yeah. What I would do is you could do a Google search on Windows XP SP3, Service Pack 3.
I do have the Service Pack 3 installed.
You do?
I do. So, I downloaded that from the Microsoft website, but not from Windows Update. You know, you could go to the Microsoft website and download it and install it yourself, or go to the Windows Update.
Right.
And have them do it all. Well, the Windows Update doesn't work. So I do have Service Pack 2 and 3 installed.
Okay.
It seems kind of strange because it did install them up to a point, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and it will, like I say, it'll download them, but then it just says the installation was failed. And like I say, short of spending an hour or so in live chat, is that pretty much my only thing to figure out why. I thought at first that it was maybe there was something wrong with their system or their server or something like that that wasn't allowing it to work. But you know, it's been a month now and I still can't do my the security updates and stuff like that.
Right. So when you in your system preferences for Windows security and for automatic updates,
mm-hmm.
you have it set up so it allows you to download and approve updates?
Yes.
And then
I've tried it a couple different ways. I thought that maybe because the automatic updates was on and I was physically trying to do it as well, that they were kind of getting jumbled together, and so I turned it off and tried it manually, and that didn't work, and then I switched it back to the automatic, and I've tried installing I'm on the road right now, so I can't mm-hmm. think of which security update it was, but I've tried installing one or two of them, like, 8 or 9 times, and
no.
it keeps coming back as failed install.
Right.
It downloads it okay, but
what I would recommend doing, I have access on my virus info center page. I also mm-hmm. I'm in the process of doing some changes to the website. It might say tech center, but there's a whole bunch of links to software and hardware forums.
Uh-huh.
And one of the sites I would go to is MSN groups or MS news groups
mm-hmm.
and MS Usenet. And those two sites, if you do searches on the problem that you're having,
uh-huh.
There'll probably be some suggestions in terms of how to fix it. There's
okay.
there's something that's getting in the way that you may have to specifically, you know, uninstall, or you may have to make some edits to some files.
Okay. And I wasn't sure if I would just have to, if I should try reformatting it again or.
Right. I wouldn't go that far. You just have to, sometimes they give you a couple of options to try, and sometimes they give you a whole list of, you know, like maybe 10 or 12. The other thing is to go to MVPS. I believe it's .org, but I also have a link to their site too. And the plus L stands for their big list. And if you click on the plus L from my page, you'll be able to scroll down to the Windows XP specialists, and some of them have their own forums that you can do searches on.
That was MVPS.org?
Yep. Yeah, it stands for Microsoft Most Valuable Professional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
I've had to go through some of those things, and sometimes they come back and say, here, do one, two, or three. And sometimes they give, like, you know, 10 things to try, and I'm like, oh, my. You know, and you just kind of shake your head, because I've had to do it with new systems that didn't work properly, and it's like two of them side by side, and you'd think they'd be exactly the same, and they're responding differently, and you just shake your head and go, how do people deal with this? But that's what you do. That's how you troubleshoot it.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking personal computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Let's go to Deborah and Gilman next. Deb, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much. And I hope I'm not asking questions that have already been talked about because I came on the program late. I have a Sony Vaio Windows XP 2002 with 512 RAM, and I am having trouble with disk space. On my C drive, I only have 4%. On my D drive, I have 81% left. And for the last couple months, I've taken off everything I can from the C drive, transfer them to the D drive, or onto flash drives. And I spoke with someone locally like a computer help person, and he said that I could do one of two things. I could just purchase more, you know, get a new, I think, drive, C drive, or purchase more space, or he could try cleaning it up, but probably I wouldn't get very much back because it's always there. Is there something that I can do to get more space on my C drive? Like I said, I only have 4% left.
So how big is the hard drive? Do you know?
How big is the hard drive?
Yeah, is it a 4-gigabyte hard drive, a 10-gigabyte? Do you have any idea?
Oh, I'm in a page where it says capacity.
Yeah, total.
It says 13.97 gigabytes. That's probably what I have left, though. And then in the D drive, I have 62.71.
Okay. Hmm. Now, is this a desktop computer?
It is.
Okay. All right. A couple of things that you can do. If you right mouse click on your recycle bin.
Okay.
Okay. And then click on properties. The default is to have 10% of your hard drive space be occupied by the recycle bin. So if it says 10%, then you should resize it down to 1%.
Okay, it does say 10%, so resize it down to 1%.
Yep. So that'll free up some space.
Okay.
The other thing is in the default setting for the system restore.
Okay.
So you have to click on start, then programs, then accessories, and then system tools, and then system restore. And within system restore, you'll see a line that says something about system restore settings. And you click on that. And again, the default for the space allocated by the system for restore settings is 12% of the hard drive. So you want to resize that down to about 1% also. So just doing those two things brings back about 20%, a little bit over 20% of your hard drive space.
That's a lot.
Oh, okay, great.
Because the operating system allocates that space for use by those two applications.
Okay.
So that'll free up some space and make it work better.
All right.
The other thing is, if you, again, you click on Start, click on Programs, click on Accessories, click on System Tools, and do Disk Cleanup, you'll want to have it, you know, do, it'll go out there, find out what it can clean up and, you know, delete, and you should say okay to that and get rid of those files.
Okay, I've done, and I've done the disk defragmenter and
all right. The other option, and this, I wouldn't recommend, number one, doing it without doing a backup, you know, having a backup of your system or a couple of copies to make sure that your data files are backed up.
Okay.
But the capacity that you're telling me is if you have 81% of your D drive free, you simply need to repartition the drives so that you have more space on C versus D. There's a company that puts out a product called Partition Magic.
Okay.
There may be some other products out there, but you know, if you did a Google search on Partition Magic, you'd find the product. And what you can do is dynamically resize, you know, your C drive so it's bigger and your D drive is smaller.
Or I guess that was what my question was. Is there a way to make my D drive my primary drive instead of my C drive? But that's what you're telling me.
No, you can't. In the world of operating systems, the C drive is the primary drive, the boot drive for the operating system. In the hardcore techie geek world, you know, you could back up everything and then reinstall your operating system. And prior to doing that, you would use what's called F-disk and reallocate your partitions and then reinstall the operating system.
You don't want to do that, Deb.
Restore your data files. In the world of using applications such as Partition Magic, which is very popular, I've used it on a file server, you can dynamically resize, say, I want this to now, instead of being this size, I want it to be this size, and then it takes the other drive and reduces it in size, because the C and the D drive are actually on one physical drive.
Oh.
You have one single drive that's split up into a C and a D, and the problem is that the operating system has grown, is taking up more and more of your free space, and here's the real kicker. If you add more RAM to your computer to help make it a little faster, it will use more swap space on your hard drive, which is going to probably be pointing to your C drive, and that will make it even smaller. You know, in the long run, you know, looking at, you know, Partition Magic, you know, that kind of a product will probably go, you know, save you some time and money in terms of, you know, moving to a larger hard drive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is the one that I really need to back up my system when I use it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and don't rely on just one copy. I usually like to have a couple of copies of backups.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much. I learned so much from you.
All right. Thanks,
Good
Deb.
Luck.
Peter in Stoughton will go to you next. Hi, Pete.
Good morning. I'll make this quick because we're coming up on a closing. I've recently been unable to get Windows IE6, or rather Internet Explorer 6, to open sites that I go to all the time. This has only happened in the last week or so. And a site like, well, for instance, Pop URLs, I'll go to it and go off to where they lead me, then try and come back to Pop URLs, and I'll have to refresh it or sometimes just start it up all over again. And in some cases, this is kind of frustrating because I can see behind the plate that tells me Explorer cannot open the site itself. And I was wondering if you could tell me what's going on. I haven't made any major changes in my browser or my computer or anything.
Have you tried another browser on your system?
I haven't recently.
Okay. Well, one, I would recommend that make sure you have, you know, another browser, you know, like Firefox, Mozilla, Opera. There are a number of them out there, but so it allows you to check whether or not it's a problem with, you know, one browser versus the other, or is it, you know, the website that's actually, you know, the root of the problem?
Okay.
And you mentioned Internet Explorer 6. Internet Explorer 7 has been out, you know, for quite a while.
I dislike the format on that.
Okay.
I'd rather open two separate browsers than try and deal with the pages, which take up a lot of physical space on my
right.
screen.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's, you know, the problem, but it, you know, at some point in time, you know, it's some of the enhancements that they've done to Internet Explorer 7 will probably eclipse, you know, the website design world, you know, and leaving the Internet Explorer 6 users behind. So, you know, that's something also to consider. But I would take a look and see if another browser, you know, is giving you the same problems, because if it's not giving you the same problems, then it's the browser and it needs to, you know, be fixed.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network. Talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. And Pete, you always have a top 10 list for us of great websites to go to every month. What have you got for us this month?
All right. This first one is access to nature pictures, videos of various animals from around the globe, and even covers one that are close to extinction. It's called itsnature.org. Number two is short for Business Network. And if you need help with business management, wide variety of articles from thousands of trade publications. It's called BNET, BNET.com. This next one, I was looking, Larry, you know, I explored the solar, the photovoltaic, and got really disappointed with the cost, you know, price tag on that. And I said, you know, I wonder if there's something else I can do with it, you know, like maybe downscale, you know, minimal investment instead of the numbers they're talking about. So I found a website, and it's not just about solar energy, and I emphasize that. It has, it's a resource of more than 9,000 renewable energy links, and they are cross-referenced. So when you do a search, it's extremely useful to help people, you know, homeowners, engineers, hobbyists, educators, and so forth. It's called discoversolarenergy.com. And this next one, in a sense related, but it's, you know, what had been mentioned by Al Gore in terms of the project of the Alliance for Climate Protection. The mission is educating people in the U.S. and around the world about the, you know, climate crisis and how it's solvable. It's called We Can Solve It. I believe it's .com. I didn't put that in there. The next one is a one-stop shop for green news solutions and product information. It's called TreeHugger.com.
Okay.
And if you're interested in, you know, dwellings or your home or house, it's a site put up by a print magazine, and you can do a search in their blogs about modern home technology, kitchen technology, and so forth, and it's called dwell.com. The iPhone, the new iPhone that came out in July, finally, my son, you know, is waiting for that. There's a resource that's great for help with the phone, applications, and news, and more. And if you don't know about jailbreaking, you know, type in jailbreaking at this site. Go to iPhoneAtlas.com. And an Apple resource that covers rumors and news about Apple and related products is called MacRumors.com. And this next one is a online writers community. It has over 5,000 author members with access to more than 49,000 articles for people just looking for information on a wide variety of topics, and it's called SearchWarp, search and WARP.com. And then this next one is also a search resource. You can search through over 25,000 articles for answers to common questions. And it's called wisegeek.com. So it's not about the technology. It's called wisegeek.com. And, you know, just think of a common question, and they probably have it, and they have answers to it. And I put a link up there to Web Anywhere, which is a web-based screen reader that I believe it's put out by the the University of Washington, and they have a YouTube demo up there, and it's you know, for people that have sight problems or blind, and check out the YouTube demo that they put online. It looks pretty neat, and it's free.
And it's free. All right, all those, if you didn't get them down, go to infostar.com. And
click on current top 10 or go to the web archives and scroll down to today's date.
Bill in Dubuque, Iowa is up next. Bill, hello to you.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got two problems here with a new computer. It's in Windows Mail. My old one, I had Outlook Express. The Windows Mail has an icon for ABC check, but when I hit it, it gives me a flag here that says, this language is no longer available for spell checking. Please select another in the spelling options dialog. I've been all over the place, and I can't find anything to do anything about it.
What I would probably... So this is Windows Mail?
Windows Mail, yeah.
I would probably check... with Microsoft's website for, you know, this, there might be a setting in your system that has to be changed. It's just not right. Or they may say there's a patch that needs to be applied. The best site for that, if you do a search on Microsoft News Groups, you'll probably find, you know, and do a search in there for Windows Mail and the problem that you're having. The other option would be to go to mvps.org and then look at their big list and find the people that specialize in Windows Mail.
MPBS?
MVPS.
Well, V as in Victor.
Yep.
Okay, and the other problem is when I do open up an email that I've received, not when I open it up, but when I go to my inbox, if I highlight one of the emails titles, it automatically is open down below. And sometimes I like to highlight it, hit properties, and see who it's from, because I don't open up emails that I don't, you know, people I don't know, because I'm afraid you don't know what the heck you're going
to
get.
Right. That's a setting that you have to change so that you don't allow your mail to be previewed. So that's what you need to look for.
Where would I find that? In tools? Or?
Probably tools and then options. Or, you know, sometimes they're called preferences.
Oh. Tools, options, or preferences. Huh?
Yeah, and then you have to go through the tabs you might have. It might be for settings or maintenance. But that's what you're looking for, is to check off of the preview pane.
Compose, send, signature, spelling, security, connection, or advance.
Yeah, so you just have to search through and you'll find it.
All right. Well,
thank you very much.
Yep, good
thanks,
luck.
Bill. Luke in Wauwatosa, on to you now. Hi, Luke.
Yeah, I want to upgrade the video card in my computer, and I'm wondering if I can just add another one to a open slot in it, or do I have to pull the older one out and just put the new one in?
You can actually have more than one video card in your computer, so you could just add one to the open slot.
Really? And then how do I know how to get a better one? Like, is there like a number that it would say how fast it is?
I mean, in terms of what's the best video card to add to your computer?
Because I want
to
get a better one, right?
Okay. How old's the computer, do you know?
It's a Vista. It's an 07 Vista.
Okay. So it's fairly recent.
Yep.
What I would do, are you looking for, like, online gaming or, you know?
Yeah, just gaming card. Like, I know what it is. It's a NVIDIA 8400.
Okay.
And it has 256 video card RAM.
Right. What I would do is a really good site for that, for looking at reviews, would be CNET.com. And if you click, if you do a search through their site, or you could go to reviews.cnet.com, and then if you type in that NVIDIA 8400, it will probably give you a review of that. It might even talk about, you know, other options that you might want to look at a different manufacturer, or it may say that's, you know, the editor's choice or the best one.
Okay.
Can you put two different brands together?
Sure, no problem. The interesting thing about here's the kicker on this one. The interesting thing about adding two video cards to the computer and not having a problem with that, what do you think the next option is?
Well, I already upgraded the RAM.
No. What do you think the next processor option is? That you could actually have two monitors hooked up.
Huh?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So you could actually have your desktop on one, and then click on an application, and then the application is running on the other monitor.
Yeah, that's what Sidebar's for.
Uh-huh.
yeah, and also, can you upgrade the processor without switching out the motherboard?
Typically not, unless the board that you have allows it to be used with another processor. And that can be, it can be a little tricky. It can be done. But you usually have a CPU cooling fan is an issue where the processor goes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the pins are sturdy but can be delicate if you force them. And the CPU can only go in one way. It's marked off that way. But I can tell you from experience, changing out the CPU can be a little tricky. It can be done. It's just that, you know, if you have someone show you how to do it, if your board supports the faster CPU, and again, the CPU cost is usually the big part of your computer. It's sort of like the engine in a car. So, you know, the cost of upgrading that CPU, if your board can support it, there could be quite a range in price on that chip. So.
All right.
It can be done, but it's not something I would, you know, say should be at the top of your list. Adding more memory would be, you know, if your system could support 4 gigs of RAM versus the typical 2, I would probably say, you know, if you can put in 4, your speed is going to be improved quite a bit.
How do I know if it does support 4?
If you have some system board specs that came with your computer, you can do some online research with that. You could also look in the papers that came with the computer. It might tell you. You can also go to the manufacturer's site and do a search on the model, see what it says about that, and then also the tool Belark Advisor, and then the gentleman that called in earlier, from if you go to crucial.com and download their tool that you can run, it'll tell you, you know, what you can add to your system as well.
All right,
thanks.
So you got
a lot
of research to
do. Yeah, a lot of research, Luke. Good luck to you. Thanks for calling. Bob in Madison, up to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Outlook Express. It is version 6. I'm getting so many emails from somewhere from Nigeria and all that. Oh, you won $1.7 million. please go and collect it. And
don't you want that money?
Yeah.
No, I've been deleting it, but every day I'm getting about 25 messages like that. So I went to this Outlook Express and message to block the sender, but it is not doing it. It's not blocking at all. It's coming through it. And I have a Norton security system too, and I don't know what to do. I'm getting frustrated with this.
Mm-hmm. A couple of options. One is, I'll outline a few options for you. One is there's a resource called InsideOE.com. InsideOE.com.
Uh-huh.
And that's a good resource to know about for using Outlook Express. And we'll have information to help you with the next thing, which is for you to set up some rules for mail that comes into your inbox.
Okay.
And, you know, have it go automatically to your delete because it, you know, has some of this information, you know, on, you know, it's spam that you're trying to tunnel off or move to your delete box so you don't have to deal with it. And then the other thing is you could look at a spam service which kind of pre-qualifies senders of your of email. In other words, it will flag stuff that is considered spam, and if it's and I've seen these work if the person that originated the message is really trying to get through to you and you know who they are, once you approve of their message, when you have a system like that in place, then their email will get through. But anything that's spam-related, unless the originator, you know, replies or is certified by the system, you know, you won't get their messages. I tend to not like that because sometimes people are trying to get through to you or services that you forgot you signed up for are trying to get through to you,
yeah.
And then they don't have a way of, you know, fixing that or certifying their email, and then you end up losing that. So I would encourage you to go to InsideOE.com and then work on trying to set up rules so that, you know, the spam is sent to your delete box or trash or yeah. A spam folder that you could, you know, later review quickly and just, you know, delete all of them.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you, Bob, for calling. Vic in Amherst Junction is up next. Hi, Vic.
Yeah, hi, Larry. We have WildBlue as our service provider for getting the internet, email, and all that stuff. And it's a satellite service. And lately this summer, and part of it is because of our increased use, we're getting slowed down. We're getting letters that we hit our threshold, and that threshold has been exceeded, so they give you a notice at about 80%. We found out that we have the option of going with a bundling service through the only phone company in our area, and it includes the internet at 1 meg, which equals about the same price as, you know, the WildBlue service. They mentioned that eventually all DSL, cable, and satellite will be limited as far as, you know, being a shared network. Is that true? Is that going to happen with all DSL as well?
When you say, you mean metered or shared?
Yes, well, right. And that's what's happening with... you know, with the satellite service with WildBlue, is you're given a certain amount of bandwidth,
right.
and then you're ramped down if you hit that 80% mark. And what we heard is, and this was from the WildBlue representative, was that eventually they're going to have to do that with DSL anyway, because right now it's all unlimited. So that means my neighbor is going to be able to download as much as he wants, and my other neighbor will be... You know, we're all, you know, kind of attached to this, like you said earlier, you know, to that a local hub.
Mm-hmm.
And the distance from that hub is going to, you know, there's only so much you can put down the pipe, right? And
well, I think you're talking about two different things. One is
okay.
Almost like a metered access where they're saying you're hitting your allocation of usage for the month,
Correct.
Which is sort of like minutes on a cell phone versus... you know, having a certain online ramp to the internet, and you would like to go faster, but your online ramp is only, you know, 1 meg, and the only way to go faster is to tell them to, you know, bump it up a notch if that speed is available. So those are two different things. The metered access is something like there are web hosting companies that say traffic is limited to 2 megs worth of throughput, and there are other services that offer unlimited So no matter how much web traffic you get, you're never going to pay any more. So
yeah.
That's called metered.
Okay, and what they're saying is that eventually everything is going to have to become metered?
Well, I give you an example. In Madison, there is a Sonnet ring that I believe the access is 650 million bits per second. And, you know, fiber optic and so forth. You know, and we're just small little garden hoses tapping into that.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, as they continue to increase, you know, the infrastructure, the hardware infrastructure, and they're also working on the internet too, which is, you know, their backbone. I forgot what we talked about this a long time ago because it's been years since they initiated it. So the throughput speed on that is increasing. So.
Yep.
You know, your Wild Blue sounds to me like there is a metered access issue.
Right, until they put another satellite up there or whatever.
Right. But the land-based solution, I do not believe you're going to see, you know, the metered access. It doesn't sound...
Because there's so many options of how you piggyback that signal,
right.
That data signal, on like a phone line or you know, whatever
right.
The phone company is using. I think it's probably fiber optic or something.
Right.
And that's why they're able to say that with a lot of confidence that, yep, no problem. You're gonna be able to have unlimited service. So
right. Now,
I guess we'll go to that.
Yeah. Now, based on where you are, you know, again, like I talked earlier in the show, check with references.
Yeah. Get
pre-qualified with a technician.
So it's the only option in town, unfortunately, in Amherst.
It's the only option, but what I'm saying is that if that only option all of a sudden says, well, your connection is going to only allow 128, well, you're really not much better than dialing, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm saying get pre-qualified, check and see how it works, because... They may say we can do 1 meg is your top internet speed with DSL, but you may be too far, and your reliable signal strength is only going to get you 128.
Yeah.
Well, then you're using a modem. You know, you're using a dial-in modem access, and you're not going to be very happy. And you may, you know, say, well, we're going to stick with Wild Blue, and we're just going to have to curtail some of our usage because we're being metered for how much we can use.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Vic. And Pete, thanks to you.
Always great, Larry. Thank you.
You'll be back on September 4th, and we'll do this all over again.
Sounds great.
All right. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, he'll be back with us on September 4th. Just to let you know, Wednesday of this week, we'll be broadcasting from State Fair. Jim Packard and I will be down there. And we'll be broadcasting from the Central Mall area. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. Scott Craven will be one of our guests, and he'll be there in person. It's UW Day on Wednesday. And so we're looking forward to broadcasting live from there. Stop by, listen to the show, say hello. Afterwards, we'd love to have a chance to talk with you. So that's this coming Wednesday for State Fair. And to let you know, tomorrow we'll talk about, let's see, what are we talking about? Oh, we're going to be talking about the healthcare workforce crisis, for one thing. And then we'll also be discussing the celebration of Sauk County's unique man mound. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.